Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host and tour guide, Yada. Each weekday morning here on GCN, I strive to expose the beguiling and destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism in the media, and with military and economic schemes. If you listen, your eyes may be open, and you may ultimately change your mind towards many of these human institutions. Instead of merely presenting the news, my mission this morning will be to help you understand what is occurring behind the headlines, all while predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 20 years. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on his terms by way of his one and only covenant and through his always dependable Torah teaching, so that with his guidance, you'll be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship. Our phone number for those who would like to question, criticize, or affirm anything that is said during this program is 877-376-4545. As we turn our attention to Algeria first, and to the uprising of Islamic jihadists in northern Africa, we learned that at least 48 of the foreign hostages, those would be non-Muslims, were killed during a four-day siege of the Algerian gas plant. Reports say that 25 bodies found at the complex on Sunday were all those of the captives. It is interesting that these particular jihadists in standard Islamic form, when they attacked the gas production facility, they immediately told the people there that they were Islamic jihadists. They identified themselves as fundamentalist Muslims and said that in accordance with the Quran and Hadith, that they would be killing all of the non-Muslims, but they had no issue with the Muslims. The Muslims were free to go. And yet, when the world tries to understand what happened here with at least 48 and probably more non-Muslims being murdered simply for doing their jobs, non-Muslims that were actually aiding and abetting an Islamic country by manning, developing its ability to suck black ooze out of its sand, that they will be linked to Al-Qaeda. They will be disassociated in every possible way from Islam, and yet that's all they were, is good Muslims. They admitted it. They confessed to their crime. Why is it that the institutions of America, political, religious, academic, and media, can't tell you the truth even when the truth is obvious? Well, the search is continuing in the gas plant where as many as 20 hostages remain unaccounted for. Those would be 20 more non-Muslims, so the death toll is in all likelihood going to be 70. Five suspected Islamist attackers were reportedly arrested on Sunday. It is amazing how this term Islamist now is being used so ubiquitously by the media. It's a term designed to convey the original intent of radical Islam or Islamic extremism is the intent of it. But the reality is that the Islamic terrorists are fundamentalists. They are simply good Muslims. They are Muslims who are doing what Allah ordered them to do in the Quran, what Muhammad did. They are following Muhammad's orders. They are following their wannabe God, Allah's orders. They are simply good Muslims. Why don't we simply call them what they call themselves? Fundamentalist Muslims. The Algerian authorities had said on Saturday that it had killed all 32 hostage takers, but that's not the case. You know, it's kind of funny here. They want to refer to them as hostage takers as opposed to murderers. They don't even want to refer to them as Islamic jihadists, but that's what they were. They saw to it that each of the 70 non-Muslims were murdered. The suspected organizer of the attack, Mukhtar Belmokhtar, said that 40 militants had taken part. Now, in his terminology, he would have used the word mujahideen, which is an Arabic word identified with the Quran and Hadith, and therefore an Islamic religious term, which conveys the notion of a mujahideen is a holy warrior, a religious warrior in Allah's cause. The siege ended when the troops mounted an assault on Saturday, saying that the militants had begun killing foreign hostages. Once again, they're referred to as militants as opposed to fundamentalist Muslims. Western leaders condemned the attack, with French Defense Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian describing it as an act of war. You know, when you deploy terrorist attacks, they can be used in war. You know, the North under Lincoln prevailed in its assault of the South by using terrorism. The war ended as a result of Sherman deploying terrorist tactics in his march to the sea, making continuing to fight the war impossible for the South. The United States prevailed in World War II in the Pacific theater by using terrorist tactics, continued to bomb Japanese cities, civilian areas, night after night, killing tens of thousands of people each night, making the war unsustainable because of the terror that was perpetrated on the civilian population. Just because someone performs a terrorist act, though, does not make it an act of war. These particular terrorists, these Islamic fundamentalists, explained what they were doing and why they were doing it. And their rhetoric to the Muslims who were working at the facility said it all. You know, we're here to remove the infection of non-Muslims from our country. In other words, in an Islamic country like Algeria, non-Muslims are considered a poison. They're an infection that needs to be cut out. And they were there to rid their country of that infection, even though all of the non-Muslims there were simply working at jobs that Muslims were unprepared to be able to do, unqualified to do, that were providing about 90% of the revenue for that country. This attack shows Mukhtar, who has convictions in absentia for murder, for kidnapping, and for terrorism, all fundamentalist Islamic activities. Muhammad was a mass murderer. Muhammad funded his religion initially through kidnapping for ransom, and Muhammad led 75 terrorist raids. So when you hear those terms linked together, murder, kidnapping, and terrorism, you know you're talking about a fundamentalist Muslim following Muhammad's example, saying that he was prepared to negotiate with Western and Algerian leaders if operations against Islamists in Mali were stopped. Now, of course, that's a lie, but lying is also a fundamental trait of Muslims. They are told that lying to non-Muslims is considered a righteous and religious act because it makes them easier prey. This particular attack had nothing to do with the French invasion of Mali. It was planned and coordinated long before that intervention took place, before it was even publicly discussed. So we have now a fourth characteristic of Islam. Among those who were killed, we find six Filipinos. We find three from the British Isles, from the UK. We find one from Colombia. We find 10 Japanese citizens that were there on the rig. Romania provided its citizens and shed its blood there as well. There were 5 Norwegians in that particular oil field. And the list of non-Muslims and people with engineering degrees from non-Islamic countries goes on and on. There was an interview with Vicky Huddleston, who is a former U.S. ambassador to Mali, that was sent to me by a listener to this program, who said that the United States government has clandestinely paid out $500 million in ransoms to the perpetrators of this attack. She said that we did so for right reasons. We were trying to contain them. So, Ms. Vicky, what do you think the ransoms, the $500 million in ransoms that you paid to this particular Islamic jihadist cell bought for you? Because obviously it did not contain them. Do you think that maybe it bought for them weapons, the very weapons that were deployed, the very weapons that were purchased from the Libyan terrorists that the United States equipped to commit acts of murder? When does the United States say, we are responsible for this? We sent these weapons to Libya. These weapons that we sent to Libya, that we used to arm and equip fundamentalist Muslims, Islamic Mujahideen, to take over what was at the time a secular government, were used to kill our ambassador. We're responsible. Not some movie. It's us. When we look at the weapons that were deployed to make it possible for these 40 Islamic jihadists to kill 70 non-Muslims, when does the United States say our failed foreign policy, our failure in understanding, our tendency to supply weapons to murderers aided and abetted this crime? We're responsible. The fact that we gave $500 million to this particular terrorist cell is why this happened. When are we going to hear the United States government accept responsibility for its stupidity? Of course, that is not going to occur. And what happened in this particular interview with Vicky Huddleston, former U.S. ambassador to Mali, is that she blamed everything on a new acronym. AQIM was responsible. No, it wasn't Muslims. It wasn't our fault. It was all AQIM. Hello, and welcome back to Shattering Myths. The video report that was presented, I believe it was by CNN, with the interview with the nincompoop who had formerly served as the U.S. ambassador to Mali. There is on a lot of news-oriented website, there's an opportunity to post a comment. Gamal Al-Din wrote this, with all due respect, the West won't be able to defeat Al-Qaeda. That's what AQIM stands for. It's Al-Qaeda in the Maghreb. Won't be able to defeat Al-Qaeda because it is supported and financed by the Muslim Brotherhood, Salafs, who rule in Egypt now, rich oil sheikhs in the Arabian Peninsula, and also by Hamas in Gaza. They're all one and the same. The West must wake up to this reality before it is too late, and they acquire a nuclear bomb. Is that clear enough? To which all of the comments were written by fellow nincompoops. The first one was, when people think of the devil, there was no devil mentioned here, the devil appears, as if the problem was the man who made the astute comment. It says you are actually threatening to eliminate people. So the more people will resist being eliminated. It's you who are the seed of the problem. So if you tell the truth, if you say the problem is Islam, it is widespread. Most Muslims are fundamentalist. and there is no difference between a Muslim who committed that act of terror in Algeria and a Muslim who voted for the Muslim Brotherhood or Salafist candidate in Egypt, or who picked up a rifle to participate in the revolution in Libya or in Syria, or who fought against the Americans in Afghanistan or Iraq, or those Muslims who flew planes into our buildings. Same religion, same playbook, same agenda. That's the truth. But if you sell the truth, then you, according to those who are politically correct, which means that those who are incapable of exercising good judgment, you are the seat of the problem. I'll bet you that I have 5,000 letters from Muslims and from Christians and from socialist secular humanists that convey the same thing. That if you tell people that here's the evidence that proves conclusively and irrefutably that the problem is the religion of Islam, that it is violent to a fault, that it is immoral, and that it is destructive, it is deadly, and that the problems associated with Islam are so deeply seated in the religion that they cannot be resolved, and that if you do not come to oppose Islam, then you are damning Muslims to living in hellish conditions, and you're exposing those you love to the terror that Islam inspires. The most merciful thing you can do, the wisest thing you can do, is to oppose Islam. And here's proof. Of course, Prophet of Doom provides 1,000 pages of that proof. And what you get back instead is, you're hateful, you're a bigot, you're the problem, you're the one who's really the terrorist. That's the world that academia, steeped in political correctness, or academia in the Islamic countries, infested by religion, produces morons who make such statements. This weekend, a court in Bangladesh sentenced a well-known Muslim cleric to death for crimes against humanity during the country's 1971 War of Independence. Now, I typically wouldn't get into a story like this, because when you read that, it is such an isolated case that a court, an Islamic court, would sentence a Muslim to death, that you just say, all right, you know, something's odd here. Either it was in absentia, and therefore that it was just a done for token reasons, and then they'll start sentencing non-Muslims who are actually there, and they're just looking for window dressing. But in this particular case, I decided to read on. First of all, it is interesting that this was the 1971 War of Independence. For those in the know, Bangladesh was part of Pakistan in 1971, but the Muslims couldn't get along with the Muslims, and they seceded from them. And, of course, in 1947, Pakistan split from India when India won its independence from Britain in one of the few peaceful revolutions in human history. Muslims hated and were uncomfortable living with Hindus. To Shattering Myths. If you'd like to engage in this discussion, our number is toll-free, 877-300-7645. As I shared with you, I began to read this story. Bangladesh is one of the most disgusting places on earth. It's you want to know what hell is like, at least how hell is depicted in people's minds. Go to an Islamic country. Bangladesh would be a great example, poster child, for this is not the right way to run a country. they sentenced a Muslim cleric to death. Now, of course, that sounded so unusual that I decided to read on. The man's name is Abdul Kalam Azad. His conviction was the first verdict handed down by this controversial tribunal. All right, well, that began to make sense. That all squares. It was the first verdict ever for the tribunal, and the tribunal itself is controversial because crimes against humanity are all endorsed, approved, considered wholesome, halal in Islamic terms, in the religion of Islam. Well, the cleric, a presenter of Islamic programs on television, so this cleric is a not only a Muslim, but an Islamic cleric, a famous Islamic cleric, because he presents Islamic programs on televisions, sought and murdered six Hindus and raped Hindu women during the war. Okay, we're back to standard Islamic fare, murder and rape. He was thought to be in Pakistan and was found guilty in absentia. All right, so now the story makes sense. He could be brought to trial because he couldn't be brought to trial. You don't convict a Islamic cleric of doing the kinds of things that the Quran endorses, the kind of things that the Quran encourages, and survive in an Islamic country. But in this particular case, the cat wasn't around. The tribunal officials said that Maulana Azad's family failed to cooperate with their court and did not provide any witnesses, and no one was there to testify on the cleric's behalf. They simply ignored the trial. Of course, they ignored the trial, because according to Islam, according to Sharia, the Muslim cleric did nothing wrong. It was therefore a very fast case. Mr. Azad was a junior leader in the student wing of Jamaat-e-Islami, the party, in 1971. So he's a member of the Army of Islam. Yep, that's just like a student in the United States saying that I want to be part of the Key Club, that I think I want to be part of the Forensics Club. Well, in an Islamic country, you join a terrorist club, Jamaat-e-Islami, and they were a political party in addition to being a religious party, because Islam is equal parts political and religious. The this particular Jamaat-e-Islami set up a force to help the Pakistani army root out local resistance. In other words, root out all of those who were not fundamentalist Muslims. And in this particular case, the Jamaat-e-Islami party was paid, was organized by, was armed by, and was directed by the Pakistani military, their ISI, such as also the case with the Taliban. Bangladesh government figures estimate that more than 3 million people were killed in this way during their war of independence. The number of people who have been killed in the name of Islam is breathtaking, staggering. Speaking of Islam responding badly and of the West being clueless, France military leader said that its goal in Mali, its military aim in Mali, was the total reconquest of the country. Now, well, that's impossible. You're not going to rid Mali of Islam. And the only way that you could have a total reconquest of Mali is to eliminate the religion of Islam. That's not possible. That is not going to happen. Therefore, the stated goal is impossible. But by stating it as a goal, reconquest, when France was an imperial power that controlled Mali, is just inviting the local population not only to distrust you, but to hate you. I mean, it's like the football game, and you and you insult the quarterback's mother of the opposing team. I mean, how could a person in a responsible position make such a stupid statement? The reconquest of Mali, when Mali was a colonial possession of France. He goes on to say, we will not leave any pockets of resistance. Well, the young one knows, when it comes to religion, there's only one way that you can eliminate the religion, and that's to eliminate its host. If you are not prepared to eliminate Muslims, you cannot eliminate the influence of Islam. It just can't be done. Now, I'm not an advocate for that. I personally think it is a bad decision. I think that it would be far wiser, far more effective to use words and reason. Now, that's not to say that with the average Muslim you're ever going to save them from Islam by using evidence and reason. But if we were to universally expose and condemn the religion of Islam, tell the truth about it, it would make it much more difficult for Muslims to recruit new Muslims, for them to recruit jihadists, for them to get people to act in such a way that they risk their own lives in hope of earning the perpetual virgins in Allah's paradise. Continue to expose how rotten Islam is, how stupid the Quran is, how repulsive Muhammad was. Use evidence and reason against this religion, and you'll have a chance of at least thwarting its destructive tendencies. Well, France and its aim to achieve total reconquest of Mali has sent in 2,000 troops. Officials say the Islamists left Diabali on Friday. However, the Malian military suspects that the fighters are simply hiding in the nearby forests and in people's homes. The situation in Diabali is confused at the moment. A French colonel, who would only give his name as Frederick, told our correspondent. A senior Malian military figure cautioned that parts of Diabali's population were sympathetic to the Islamists, and this made the task of assessing the situation difficult. In other words, they have learned nothing from the American failure in Vietnam, from the American failure in Afghanistan, from the American failure in Iraq. That when you're fighting a religious foe, not a traditional army, it is impossible to tell good guy from bad guy. The only way that you can tell who you should shoot is when they're shooting at you. And even then, the person you're shooting is a civilian. And so, in a country like this, where in the north, the majority of the population is Islamic, there is no way to prevail. You know, in Vietnam, our troops did not know if a woman coming out of a hut was offering them a loaf of bread or a hand grenade. There was no way to know until it was too late. And, of course, all that does is breed distrust and hatred. And it makes prevailing in these circumstances impossible. How is it that after all of these failures, the French were incapable of recognizing that? In a related article, we are told that the French troops have begun fighting the Islamist rebels now in street battles. That France, as you know, intervened last Friday to push the to halt the Islamist push towards the capital. One witness said that the jihadists now have split up. They don't move around in big groups. They are not out openly in the streets, but they are still on the scene in public, but now in fours, fives, and sixes, and they are living inside the most highly inhabited neighborhoods. They've simply faded into the woodwork, where it makes it impossible for the French to root them out. It makes it impossible for the French to prevail. They can think, boy, we have really taken care of this town, as the Islamists pluck off their troops one at a time, as the French move on to another town, the Islamists simply return. We come out more into the open. It is a war that the West weaponry has no capacity to deal with. And what would you be left with when you prop up a puppet government in their stead? Well, here's a clue. The United Nations says that torture in Afghan prisons continues to be widespread, despite its recommendation in a similar report in 2011 to rein it in. More than half of the 635 detainees interviewed by the UN investigators said that they had been tortured. More than half. You know, the United States is guilty of using torture. We reported on the story of the German who was abducted in Macedonia and then was sodomized by the U.S. CIA in Macedonia for a month prior to being hauled off to Afghanistan, where he was tortured for months on end when he wasn't a terrorist. It's a case of mistaken identity. And yet, the difference here, if we're to make a distinction, is that the United States does torture thousands of people, but it does not torture the majority of its prison inmates. And in this Islamic country, where we actually have access to the prisons, we're able to determine that more than half of those incarcerated are tortured. What the UN came to realize, however, is that there were no deterrents, no disincentives to cease using torture because of the Islamic culture. And as a result, there was no hope that torture would cease. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Back in a moment. To the final news segment for Shattering Myths this morning. Our number is 877-300-7645. Staying in the same part of the world, because we're continuing to evaluate the violence, the terrible destruction that Islam brings to our world. It can be done either by doing what we did on Friday with IQ al-Rasuli, which is to read scores of Quran and Hadith statements that reveal why Muslims act this way, why they are so deadly, why they are so destructive, because we can examine how their scriptures order them to behave in this manner, or you can simply look at their behavior. The BBC has evidence of a massacre in central Syria in a village on the edge of the city of Homs. A team visiting Hawassia was told that at least 100 people were murdered, literally burned alive in their homes last week. Syrian army soldiers told the BBC that all of the bodies had already been taken away, but the BBC correspondent still found the scene of a vicious murder. According to the BBC's correspondent, three charred bodies lay sprawled just inside of one house. A trail of blood stained the cement in the kitchen, where china and teacups sat neatly on a shelf. More than a dozen bullet casings were scattered across the floor, all smeared with blood. In another room, there were multiple burnt corpses who were curled up next to a broken bed. Now, it is interesting that the BBC correspondent was able to be there so long as they were in the presence of the Syrian army. But they could not have been there if they were instead embedded in the Muslim rebels who the United States and other nations are arming. The soldiers who escorted the team to the area said that hundreds of men from a militant Islamist rebel group, the Nura Front, which is the group that the United States and other countries are supplying with most of the weapons, committed the killings. So, according to the soldiers who escorted the BBC team to the scene, this mass murder, people, hundreds of people being burned alive in their homes, was committed by the rebels, by the Nura Front. But out of earshot of the official Syrian minders, another woman said the army was present at the time, that some soldiers even apologized for the murders, saying that others had acted without orders. The testimony matches accusations on activist websites that this was the work of a pro-government militia known as Shebiha. So, what we know for certain is more than 100 people were burned alive in their homes. What we know is that it is impossible to tell whether or not this was perpetrated by the Syrian army, by deserters in the Syrian army, by the Syrian official Syrian militia, which is Shebiha, which is a ruthless Islamic terrorist organization, or by the Nusra Front, which is the largest of the Mujahideen fighting against the government, or by another group there in Syria. The only thing you can tell for absolute certain is that Muslims murdered Muslims. That we know for certain. And it is true that as deadly as Muslims have been against non-Muslims, that Muslims continue to murder more Muslims than they do anyone else. When you oppose Islam, the people that you help the most are Muslims. We spent considerable time reporting on a story about the gun control and how it is impossible for any government agency, any government official in the United States to oppose guns, to constrain the ownership of weapons without destroying their foundation, very much like you know, Paul had to destroy the Torah, which is the foundation of Yah's communication to us, for him to invent his new religion. If you are opposed to or in support of constraining guns, of restricting certain types of guns, then you are opposed to the U.S. Constitution. And to do that means you're undermining the foundation of the country. Well, on Tuesday of last week, the New York State Legislature, by an overwhelming majority, passed the first gun control law since the shootings in Newton. And their comment was, common sense can win, in their rejection of the U.S. Constitution.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of young